From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first edition of the Midnight Movie Game Boys. See what I did there? I'm Hunter Deucing, and not joined by John or Stu this time. I am just joined by Garrow. Say hello, Garrow.
Hello, and the reason you're not joined by John and Stu is because this is a podcast about video games.
Yes.
And John, I'll tell you a little story. John, when he was about seven, played Pac-Man and was like, what is this bullshit? I remember when we played games, we played them on a board. And he was like, we paid for it once, we weren't constantly throwing quarters in it. This is bullshit.
He said, you know, you bought a game and you were, you bought the game and you could play it as many times as you want. This is how you have to feed quarters into it. They're just trying to take our money.
Yep. And he goes, if I'm going to look at a TV screen, I want it to be Mannix on it. And basically, he was against video games. And Stu, we all know, when you say, hey, Stu, you want to play some video games? He thinks that means throwing old VHS cassettes at Abbos who are, high on petrol fumes.
I asked John, I said, John, why don't you like Pac-Man? It's a classic. He goes, it's a game about an obese, pill-popping, hallucinating, nerd. I'd rather see a game with Charles Bronson,
Yeah. So that's why they're not here. Plus, I anytime on the regular show where you bring up video games, and you bring up the video game series we're going to be talking about tonight up a lot, you can literally hear the boredom.
Yes, you can hear John and Stu's eyes roll in the back of their head.
Yep. And it's like, oh god, Hunter's talking about video games again. Give him a couple of minutes, go and get it out of his system, and let's get back to the regular podcast.
Yeah, let's get back. John and Stu are not gamers, Garrow and I have been talking about doing a video game show for a while. In fact, we wanted to do this one a while back, and we just didn't get around to it.
Well, if you remember, my cancer derailed it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You got cancer.
Yep.
I was about to say, why didn't we do it? Oh, because Garrow had cancer. That's right.
Yep.
This is kind of – we've had some sideshows in the past. I did the Netflix roulette with Andrew Farmer, but he went off the grid. So but this is one I wanted to do, like a sort of side video game show. John and Stu couldn't make it this week, so I figured, Garrow and I will do our video game show. So
yeah, I mean, this is if the audience here is probably wanting a different show this week.
What happened this week that they might want us to talk about? Yeah.
I mean, we are recording it post Trump election win, and let me just say this for the record: John and Stu weren't available to celebrate the greatest event of our life.
Yeah, no, we can't celebrate the Trump and Reich without John and Stu,
Yeah. So, it's they're like, "Oh, we have this thing called families and we're busy and blah 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 blah." And Hunter and I are like, "Shut the fuck up with your family."
And then I sit here and think, "I'm still single and childless."
And I think to myself, woohoo, I'm single and childless.
Caro's like, I wanted to be single and childless so bad, I willed myself, my balls, to get cancer.
Yep. And I'm like, oh, wait, chemo kills the sperm count? Give me some of that, too.
So, but anyway, the game we wanted to talk about was one of my favorite games from last year, Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain. And this was one that was long awaited, surrounded in controversy, but the Metal Gear, it's anytime there's a new Metal Gear game, it's an event for me, because it was a pretty, playing that for the PlayStation was sort of a game changer in video games for me. But I want to start with you. Because my Metal Gear history is a little longer than yours. Why don't we start with yours, Garrow?
Okay.
So what's your history with this series?
Well, let me tell you my history with video games. it's, you know, I, as a kid, you know, I liked playing video games. You know, I went to the arcade and I enjoyed playing them. And then my aunt and uncle, my cousins had like an Atari, and I would play, you know, their Atari when I went over. And then I ended up getting a Nintendo 8-bit and played like Super Mario Brothers and that shitty Friday the 13th game.
A game starring a fat plumber.
Yep.
And, I don't know why John sounds like Adam Carolla. I'm sorry.
But I ended up, so I had a Nintendo 8-bit, and then I didn't play video games for a long time afterwards. And then my friend, my one black friend, got a PlayStation 3, and we ended up playing that game Resistance Fall of Man, because you could play the whole thing together on split screen.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I like this PlayStation 3. I think I'm getting back into video games. And then they released... the video game Stranglehold, which was a video game sequel to John Woo's Hard Boiled, and yeah, I am a huge fan.
With both of their involvement.
Yep, and I'm a huge fan of John Woo's Hong Kong shoot 'em ups, so I was like, I need to play this. Eventually, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to buy a fucking PlayStation 3, because I wanted a Blu-ray player anyways. So, and I think it was 2007, I ended up buying... a PlayStation 3, and with that PlayStation 3 came Metal Gear Solid 4 Guns of the Patriots. And that is how I played my first Metal Gear Solid game.
Now, Metal Gear Solid Guns of the Patriots stars a video game character John might actually like, because he's an old man with a mustache who's ripped as shit.
And I played Metal Gear Solid 4. I loved the gameplay in it, but I didn't understand anything that was fucking
going
on.
That's the one Metal Gear Solid game I have not played all the way through. And that story, I've played all the games, and it doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, literally, you have an hour and 20-minute cutscenes in the game, and it's basically talking about, oh, you want to know about nanomachines? Well, let's go back to the history of nanomachines, and basically get like a 30-minute dissertation on nanomachines. And I'm like, oh my god. Every time when I'm playing this game, it's so much fucking fun, and then the minute it goes to the cutscenes, I want to blow my fucking brains out.
Yeah, like, early on, one of the problems with Metal Gear 4 is that when you're playing the game early on, it almost feels like you're just sneaking to the next cutscene.
Yeah.
Like, you're sneaking around this war zone, and it's really well done. Like, you feel like you're in a war zone. Like, the gunfire and all the chaos going on around you. But not really much happens as you between scenes. And in the Metal Gear games before that, you know, you were basically infiltrating an area, and that area was huge. But it was interconnected, and you could explore the whole thing. This one, it kind of felt like weird segmented levels with these really long cutscenes in between.
Well, it was very linear. It was very linear.
Yes, it was very linear. That's the good word to use. It was very linear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, it's like, I think if you if you just skipped all the cutscenes, I think there was about 2 hours of actual gameplay in the actual game. It was like 10 hours of story and like 2 hours of gameplay.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, that was a complaint people had with it. It does have some legendary boss fights, you know, some moments that are considered great. But so that was the first one you played. You liked it, but you were kind of confused by the story. That's probably the worst game to pick up first.
I love the gameplay. I thought the gameplay was great. I actually played through the game like 4 or 5 times just because I enjoyed playing it. But after the first time I played it, I just skipped all the cutscenes because I'm like, I'm not sitting through that shit again.
Yeah, and so what was the next encounter you had with it?
Well, I know after that they released Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker for the PSP.
Yep.
But I never played that. Yeah, and I think my next thing was Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. That was the next game I played.
Okay, yeah, which was basically kind of a glorified demo for Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain. It was basically Prelude. And here's the thing. The company that puts out these games, Konami, have become increasingly fucked up as of late. And they're sort of weird, incoherent business practices have been a source of controversy around Phantom Pain, but they put out Ground Zeroes. It's basically a demo. Like, it's a big area to explore, but you can beat it in like, you know,
an hour tops,
you know, if you just play it the way it's supposed to be played and don't explore everything. And they did something similar with Metal Gear Solid 2. I remember when the demo came out for that. It was, you were on a tanker, and there was a lot to do and explore. It was very dense. You could play through it in 30 minutes, but, you know, there was so much, there were so many little hidden things that, you know, you would play it over and over again. And this was kind of like that. But the problem was, they released this as a $60 full-priced game.
No, they didn't release it as a $60. They released it as a $30 game.
Was it $30? Because I thought I saw it for $60. Oh, man.
No, it was $30.
That's still way too much money.
Yeah, definitely way too much.
I mean, I got it for like $10, I think. But but people were coming up to me when this, because when it came out, I was working at a movie store, a store that sold movies, music, and games. And people were coming up going, oh, dude, new Metal Gear Solid. And I go, this is, by the way, this is kind of a demo. Like, do you want to pay this much for it? Because I think it was full price at this store. And they were like, oh. And I was like, yeah, do some research before you buy this. And they were like, thanks, man, you know. So, but the big change with this was that David Hayter, who had played Snake in previous games, he actually wrote the screenplay for X-Men 1 and 2 and Watchmen. And he was the voice of Snake, but they replaced him with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yep, Jack Bauer.
Yep. And a lot of people were really angry about that, but I thought he performed well.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. I enjoyed his performance in it. For, you know, I mean, it's a short game. I mean, it's you know, like you said, it's an hour. But I enjoyed playing through it. It was a fun game. I don't think it was worth $30. But you also got to remember, when that came out, there was hardly anything to play on the PS4.
Yeah, too. So I think that's one reason they released it like that, because they were like, oh, people are starving for stuff. And here's the thing with these games, is that they have a very convoluted timeline. So Metal Gear Solid 4, so like the timeline is Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 were sequels. You know, Metal Gear Solid 2 is a sequel to Metal Gear Solid 1. Metal Gear Solid 3 was a prequel.
Yep.
It was about Solid Snake's father, quote unquote, Big Boss,
who was the villain, or Naked Snake,
who was the villain of the first two games on MSX for in Japan, and so Metal Gear Solid 3 was a prequel. Then Metal Gear Solid 4 was a sequel to Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yep.
Peace Walker was a sequel to Metal Gear Solid 3. Metal Gear Solid 5 is a sequel to Peace Walker. So, you know, so there's several snakes. There's, you know, Naked Snake, a.k.a. Big Boss, a.k.a.
Liquid Snake.
And then there's Liquid Snake, who's the villain of the Solid Snake game. Solid Snake's the one from Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, and 4.
Venomous Snake.
Venom, yeah. And Venom Snake, who you are told is Big Boss, but is in fact a whole new snake.
Yep.
So Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, was like the full game, and basically at the end of the end of Ground Zeroes, my favorite is Kazuhiro Miller, his business partner. He's walking on that helicopter and he goes, "They played us like a damn fiddle." And then so their helicopter's blown up because they get this, they rescue this girl. You're supposed to extract her. It turns out there's a bomb inside of her. They pull it out, but then there's one in her vagina too. And so it blows up this helicopter, and that's the end of Ground Zeroes. And Snake's army's destroyed. And Peace Walker, you're building an army. I'm really doing a terrible job of going through this, but in my defense, the games are terrible at this too. So you build an army in Peace Walker. That army's destroyed in Ground Zeroes. And in Phantom Pain, Snake wakes up in a hospital, a Big Boss, you know, and he's missing an arm, and he's been in a coma for a long time, and people come in to try to kill him in the hospital. And a guy named Ishmael, who sounds an awful lot like Kiefer Sutherland, helps you escape.
And you also, and his name is Ishmael, and you have like a hook hand, too.
And you have a hook hand, and there's a giant flaming whale at one point flying through the sky. There's a lot of Moby Dick references in this game. And the Phantom Pain title, it applies to the game in so many ways. But you end up escaping to Afghanistan. You start like your own, you basically are rebuilding your private army.
Yeah, Mother Base.
Mother Base, and your team is called the Diamond Dogs. This is also full of David Bowie references. The theme song is the Man Who Sold the World.
Which is not actually Bowie.
No, it's not. Yeah, it is a cover. A very good cover, I thought, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
And so this one is, unlike the other games, is an open world game. So, like, you can kidnap soldiers and brainwash them to join your army, and you can, like, figure out how good they are at certain things. And you need soldiers that have certain skills to get new equipment to develop. You can develop military equipment to drop in. You can have friends to help you, like a dog, a horse, because it's Afghanistan. We get around by horse here.
D-dog. Or you can get what's her name?
Quiet.
Quiet, which pissed off all the social justice warriors.
Yeah, the thing that made the social justice, like, anti-Gamergate people angry was Quiet, the silent sniper who basically just wears a bikini and, like, fishnet leggings.
And has huge ass titties.
Big tits. And it's so funny because it's almost cartoonish how... like weird, like how the camera lingers on her breasts.
Yeah, I actually feel that Kojima is baiting liberals.
And I think he was doing that because Kojima has a history of trolling.
Yeah,
He trolls really hard with his games. Yeah. And he even released Quiet action figures and the action figures had soft fabric at the breasts. It was almost like he was intention, and he did it on purpose. Yeah. Like he is a troll. Like, I have this book called A Hideo Kojima Book, and it has a chapter devoted to Kojima trolling. So he's done this a lot, where he's intentionally misled fans and fucked with them. Like, one of the best was Metal Gear Solid 2, and I was outraged by this. When Metal Gear Solid 2 was announced, they only showed footage of Solid Snake infiltrating and doing stuff. You played the demo, you play as Solid Snake, and turns out you only play as Solid Snake for like the first hour of the game. You spend the rest of the game playing as this like whiny, like feminine, like this character named Raiden, and fans hated him, and Kojima kept him under wraps specifically to fuck with people, just to like subvert their expectations,
And wasn't on like a Metal Gear Solid 1, like you needed some code or something, and you were looking forever for the code, but the code was actually on the packaging of the game.
Yes, like so you need this frequency to call this character to move on in the game. And they're like, you need to find the packaging on the code. It's on the case. It's on the back of the case. You're like, where's this case? What is he talking about? And then you flip the case the game comes in over, and they show Snake talking to this character in a screenshot where the frequency is, and that's how you know it. I mean, it's stuff like that.
And wasn't there a thing in Metal Gear Solid 1, 2 with what's the name of that character? The one Psycho Mantis. Yeah. Where basically, like, if you like, you have to unplug your controllers or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of funny. Like, he like reads your mind and stuff, but and he does it by guessing what games you like, but really he's just reading your memory card. And you like Castlevania, don't you? But when you fight him, he just dodges all your attacks. Like, there's no way to kill him. But he can only read the left side of your brain, so you have to plug your controller into the right port. Uh-huh. And then he's like, I cannot read you! And then you just kill him, like, really easily. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he does, like, really, really... he does really fucked up things like that in every game. One of my favorites... one of the hardest boss battles is in Metal Gear Solid 3. Where it's an epic boss battle.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
His name is The End, and he's this very old man who's a sniper. And it's a very hard boss battle. Like, it's a very big area, and he is sniping the shit out of you. If you get to him, you can, like, attack him a little bit, but he runs really fast, and he runs off. But One way, if you're having a hard time with it, just save the game, turn it off. You can do one of two things. You can change the time on your console, or you can just not play it for like a week or two. If you log back in, he will die. He will have died of old age.
Yep. You know what I liked too was in Metal Gear Solid 4. I think it's right after. It's somewhere. I think after you get or you're going to Outer Heaven, but there's a thing where it's like, oh, it's where Otacon says to you, I think it's time to switch the discs. And it's like, oh, no, you're playing a PlayStation 3 which uses Blu-ray technology. So you can put the whole game on one disc. And it was like dissing the Xbox because yeah. The Xbox still used DVD technology.
Yes. No, but I'm looking at this guide here, and it just says the Metal Gear's deceptive marketing created untrusting fans because of how like Kojima would announce that it was like he announced Ground Zeroes was being directed by Moby Dick Studios.
Yep.
And like it was this Swedish developer, but then it was just like an anagram for Hideo Kojima. Like, and he would hold this giant press conference for the new director, and then he would just walk out and laugh, and everybody would be like, "Fucking, what an asshole!" And he has a huge ego, though, because you play Metal Gear Solid 5. Would you think that the game was directed by someone else?
No, because every single mission that came up was directed by Hideo Kojima.
It has a credit sequence
reminded
for every goddamn mission.
There's a mission in the game where you have to go save Hideo Kojima.
Yes! It's like Snake, and he's wearing these glasses, and they have the manufacturer of the glasses pop up on the screen. I mean, oh God, but he is just, I don't know. He's such a bizarre dude.
Yep.
And he just started his own studio. I can't wait to see what he does with it.
But, yeah, because he's doing it. He's exclusive for PlayStation.
Yes.
And the new game stars Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen.
Yep. It's going to be called Death Stranding.
Yep.
And
I heard it's going to be open world, and it's going to be, and you can do co-op with it. Which that's the one thing problem I had with Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain.
It
was screaming for co-op.
It was like you really should have been able to invade other players' bases and like have wars with each other, like on the bases you build.
Also, I felt you should be able to, like, actually play the campaign with a friend of yours, too.
Oh, totally, totally. You know? Like, have their men come in and, you know, it was just... But what was so cool about that game was how it really kind of, like, because they always talk about war, and war is this, and war is that in these games. But this one, you actually kind of felt like you're in a war. You know, like, you're going to these bases and... You know,
you're sending people out on missions.
Yeah,
you
know, airstrikes, and you know, you're actually you're managing an army while you play it.
Yep. Yeah, I was actually when I first heard about the game, I was like, oh, there's so much you have to be able to do in this game. Like, you have to manage like the amount of people you have in your base. You have to build up your mother base. You have to do this. You have to which people to pick, which people to not bring to mother base. And I'm like, oh, this is going
to
be horrible.
Yeah, because when I started playing, I was kidnapping every single soldier I came across, and I was like, "Wait, why am I taking in all these fucking losers?" I would start looking at people and go, "Okay, that guy's not skilled," and I would kill him. If I saw someone was skilled, I'd be like, "Okay, that guy's got skills I need," and I would take him in. But I started out, I was like, "Everybody's coming with me."
At first, what I thought was going to be something I would hate in the game, I became utterly addicted to. I became addicted to building up Mother Base.
Oh, yeah, it's totally awesome. Like, every time I would go back, I'd be like, how's this platform doing? I'd go inspect it,
I became totally addicted to it. Like, I have to say, like, out of all the games that are on the PlayStation, PlayStation 4 that have come out since the thing, I think my favorite is definitely... Metal Gear Solid 5.
I will agree with you there because it was the one I've played the most obsessively.
Yeah. And like, you know, Uncharted 4 came out and I really enjoyed Uncharted 4, but it still wasn't as good as Uncharted 2, which is, you know, the high point for me.
Yeah, you know, I just got the collection and I've been getting into those games. I played through the first one. And the first one, it's kind of just basic cover and shoot. action. Yeah. But the second one I've started, and I've already it starts off really good.
Slow.
It starts slow, but that stealth sequence at the beginning nearly kills the momentum. But but I was playing it and I was going, okay, this one's way better. And that's made by the team that made The Last of Us, which is a game I really like.
Yeah, Last of Us is great.
And that's a game that like has an ending that pisses people off.
I like the ending.
I thought the ending was genius.
Yep.
That'll be one we have to do sometime.
We should do definitely do a Naughty Dog episode.
Yeah, we'll do a Naughty Dog Nathan Drake Last of Us episode.
But did you get to how far did you get in Uncharted 2?
I basically did the stealth part, got caught, and I'm at the part after that. I think.
Have you gotten to Nepal yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, once you get to Nepal, that's when the game becomes fucking amazing. When Uncharted 2 first came out, my black friend, I was like, you got to get this game. Uncharted 2 is fucking amazing. He was playing through the first hour, 2 hours.
Garrow, his name is your one black friend.
Okay, my one black friend. And let's not act like I have a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And he just, after about playing it for an hour or two, he's like, this game fucking sucks. Why did you tell me to buy this? I fucking hate you. And then literally, the next day, he's texting me being like, this is the best fucking game I've ever played.
Yeah, I mean, because that stealth part, it's really rough. I'm like, why is this even in here? Because it's so badly done, you know?
Yeah, it's not great.
But the stealth in Metal Gear.
Oh, A-class. It's great.
A-class. Yeah. And I should say, I want to talk about my sort of history with Metal Gear before we get too deep into it. I remember I played Metal Gear when I was a freshman in high school. And I was, I had a Nintendo 64. And, you know, I grew up, my first game systems were a Game Boy and NES. Because I was too young for Atari. And I ended up getting an N64. I had that for a while, but, you know, when you're a teenager, games Banjo-Kazooie and Mario 64, they're really fun. You love them, but they're not really cutting it. You know, mm-hmm. GoldenEye's the edgiest game on that system. So I went to a friend's house, and I'd always heard about Metal Gear Solid. It's this new cool game, and he had a PlayStation. I was like, we were going to rent a game. I was like, let's rent Metal Gear Solid. And we played it. And I was like, holy crap. This is the edgiest, most interesting, game. It has a story that's really complex. And it's it was like watching a James Bond movie, you know. And and so I ended up, and this was when the PlayStation was selling for $100.
Uh-huh.
So I could easily save up that money in high school, you know. So I ended up getting a PlayStation. And, you know, playing games like that and Silent Hill and Final Fantasy VII. And, you know, it was just sort of, I needed that sort of thing. But it became I played through it so many times. And, in fact, I played through it again recently when Metal Gear Solid V blew me away. I can play through it in, just a few hours because I just kind of know what to do, you know. And then Metal Gear Solid II came out, and even though, it was a really frustrating game because the story was so convoluted and it was so and it subverted all expectations. But it was, you know, but you could tell as a game, it was the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And, Metal Gear Solid 3 was even better. I think that's the best Metal Gear Solid game, maybe.
That's what a lot of people say. A lot of people say that, I mean, at least story wise, that the third one is the best one.
It is story wise. I think gameplay wise, 5 is the best.
Yeah, and it also has a great theme song.
Yes, it does. It has a James Bond style opening.
Yep,
and plus you get the backstory on Big Boss.
Yeah,
which he's kind of a mysterious figure in the games, but and it has probably it story wise too. It's the least complicated. It's very straightforward. It doesn't have a ton of it has a lot of philosophical mumbo jumbo, but it doesn't have all the weird pseudoscience shit with oh, nanomachines are magic, which in Metal Gear Solid 5, it's viruses or what is it? Parasites.
Yeah, parasites, and that it attacked, like, people's speech patterns.
And language is the... language, there's all this stuff with, like, because every game he does has, like, a weird philosophical theme to it. And in Metal Gear Solid 5, it's language. Like, because the people who... in your base who get infected with this deadly virus are the only ones who speak certain languages. So it's this weird, like, virus that's engineered, or parasite that's engineered to target certain groups of people. It's too, very strange.
Too bad they couldn't invent that to, you know, for liberals.
Yeah, well, all you have to do is find certain words like cisgender and
yeah. If people say cisgender, then they get infected with the disease.
If you say you're a fucking white male,
yeah, or don't assume my gender,
or are you kidding me, Carl the Cush? Anyway,
the only way to get rid of the disease is to say Hail Peppy.
Yeah, that's the cure, or hail yeah. Like Hail Praise Keck.
Yep.
Like
or scream the top of your lungs, I'm no longer a cuck.
Or just chant Trump, Trump, Trump.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's it. Trump, 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 that's all you gotta do.
You just have to say it. You have to say it a few times in a dark room in front of a mirror.
Yep. That'd be awesome. But unfortunately, a video game is not reality.
Yeah, well, you know. But one thing I loved about Metal Gear Solid 5 was the music.
Yeah.
Because, or, well, actually, let me back up. Before I talk about the music, let me talk about the narrative. Okay, mm-hmm. Because...
well, it was definitely a lot simpler than Metal Gear Solid 4.
Well, because in Metal Gear Solid 4, you have to sit through movie feature-length cutscenes. Like, no joke.
Yep.
Like, strap in, because you're going to be watching several movies while you watch this. Yep. And by several, I mean, like, it's like, you know, several seasons of Game of Thrones, you know? Like, yep. I mean... and,
like, literally, there's about 10-hour movie of watching movies in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, it's a season of a TV show. And on HBO. And but in Metal Gear Solid 5, I thought they did something that was pretty brilliant to correct that problem. Because this game, it has more gameplay than any other Metal Gear game. And and the way they consolidated the narrative was the... information was disseminated through tapes you can listen to while you play the game.
Yep.
And so you'll see new tapes are available, and you'll get these sessions that are recorded where Snake is talking to, like, Huey Emmerich or to Kazuhira Miller or some of these people. Or my favorite is Revolver Shalashaska Ocelot.
Uh-huh.
Like, all the people with their names in quotations. Like,
uh-huh.
It became a meme pretty quick because it was so ridiculous. But and my favorite is Revolver Ocelot is pretty much the main villain throughout, one of the main villains throughout Metal Gear, but he's kind of this mercurial figure. Like, he's your ally in this game, but he's the main villain in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, in all the other Metal Gears outside of this one, he's always portrayed as, like, a raving madman. And in this one, he's portrayed as kind of, like, the most calm, even-keel person ever.
Yeah. And he's still your master of interrogation. Like, you're using him to, like, brainwash people and torture people. Like, that's what... But in Metal Gear Solid 3, like, he's a kid, but he's like a triple agent. You know, like, he's working, he's fighting you, but he's really on your side, but he's not, but he is. You know, he's one of these guys who's just like, whose side is he on? I don't know. But
and in this game, he's actually voiced by Troy Baker, who is the voice of Joel in The Last of Us and the voice of Booker DeWitt in Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
The guy who played Liquid Snake in Metal Gear Solid is the guy who voiced Leonardo in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Cam Clark. and it's the same voice. I kept expecting him to go, "Turtles fight with honor."
You know what's funny? The woman who voices Quiet... If you look up her, she looks exactly like she does in the video game.
They probably motion captured her.
Yeah. I mean, except the boobs aren't as huge.
Yeah, well, you know.
But I was stunned. I was like, oh my god, she looks exactly like she does
well,
in
like,
the video
game. And they, like, Kiefer, all those movements Snake does in the game are Kiefer Sutherland's. You know, except the stunt stuff. I think a stunt man did those, but the facial movements and a lot of the basic movements are Kiefer Sutherland. And also some other noteworthy, the character Vamp in 2 and 4 is played by Phil LaMarr.
The guy from Mad TV.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's in that, and there's some other noteworthy people in the voice casts that they've had. Mm-hmm. But you listen to the information, you get it disseminated throughout the game. It's not, you can consume it while you play. It's not a narrative where you have to sit down and watch a movie. Now, it does have cutscenes.
Yeah, and the cutscenes are actually really, really good and exciting. Because mm-hmm. The one thing about Kojima is he's very, very influenced by movies.
Yes,
you
he
know,
is.
And he wants these games to be like as cinematic as possible. And when you watch the cutscenes, they're great. Like the whole thing where you're in the helicopter and Quiet is helping you with the sniper rifle to shoot down the person in the jet who's trying to. Who's attacking Mother Base. I mean, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's a really good action scene.
Yeah, and you're not even playing it.
No. But yeah, I'm glad you brought up movies because Kojima is very movie-influenced. And in this book, he talks about the top movies that have influenced Metal Gear. And let me just get to this page real quick. His number one... Well, not number one in terms of significance, but just in terms of... on the list is The Great Escape. Mm-hmm. And you can see this in Metal Gear Solid 1. There's a scene where you're captured and locked up and you have to escape from a prison. But he said, like, you know, Metal Gear Solid games are about infiltration, but they're also about escape. You know, you have to escape these areas and you have to figure out how to do it, and there's not just one way to do it. And also in Metal Gear Solid 5, every mission has like a million different ways to complete it.
Oh yeah, you can pick what equipment you want, what sidekick you want, and that's what I enjoyed about the game, is it gave you huge amount of freedom to just do whatever the hell you wanted.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And he says, just as humans are 70% made of water, I am 70% made of film. You may mm-hmm. think I am exaggerating, but remember, I'm the guy behind Metal Gear Solid. He goes, he talks a lot about John Sturges and how much he loves his movies. But the next one on his list, this one should surprise no one, Guns of the Navarone, mm-hmm. because that's an infiltration movie, like yeah. Metal Gear. It's about guys on a mission to infiltrate a base, mm-hmm. right? And so you have escape, infiltration and escape. And another one. This will surprise no one. Escape from New York.
Yep.
Guess where that comes from?
Oh, I mean, yeah, because basically the character's named Snake. He has an eye patch, and even in like in Metal Gear Solid 2, where you know you have Raiden has a buddy who ends up being Solid Snake
yes.
in disguise, and his name in the game is Plissken.
Yes. And also like, what was it? The group that has the rights to a lot of the John Carpenter stuff has been suing the shit out of people.
Yeah, but I heard John Carpenter won't let them sue Hideo Kojima because he likes Hideo Kojima.
Because they sued like Luc Besson for Lockout, yep. But they were going to sue Hideo Kojima for Metal Gear. And John Carpenter goes, no, he's a pretty good dude. I don't want you to hurt him. But that's another game about infiltration, and he's like securing things on the scene, because in the first few Metal Gear games, you know, you don't start out with a gun. You know, you have to find all your equipment on site. You come in basically naked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Metal Gear, you know, in Snake Eater, you're eating your own food. Mm-hmm. This is one that I thought was pretty surprising. North by Northwest,
mm-hmm.
He says, is a big influence. And I think it's kind of the surprise in Hitchcock movies and sort of the mystery. This one, Planet of the Apes.
that one's a little harder to do.
It is a little harder to see. He said, sharp readers have probably noticed the similarities between Planet of the Apes and Metal Gear Solid in terms of the creator's message. Many players of Metal Gear Solid 2 say the game is too preachy, but as a citizen of the only country in the world in which the atomic bomb was used, I was strongly influenced by Apes' anti-nuke message. Because, like Metal Gear Solid games, even though you're basically killing people and having fun, they're like, but war is bad. so I guess it's the social conscious of it. Next one, I can see this, Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. pretty easy to see, sort of survival game, you know. But there are games, I mean, Dawn of the Dead's influenced countless games. Dead Rising is the most obvious one. Of course, Resident Evil. And the last one, a surprise, not a surprise, the James Bond series.
Yeah.
Probably the most obvious.
Well, I mean, he's also said in interviews that Breaking Bad influenced the Phantom Pain.
Oh, I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
Kind of the sort of... Because, you know, part of the Phantom Pain was how has Big Boss become Big Boss? You know?
Yep.
How does he go become this, like, evil leader of an army, you know?
Yep. But then, you know, he pulls the rug out on you at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh... It really wasn't Big Boss. It was some other dude, Neville, who's now a new Big Boss.
Yeah, he's Big Boss's body double.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things where I think, because the whole series, Big Boss's shadow looms large.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole point of that was to say that Big Boss is not as big as his legend.
Well, also, I think he was also filling in a hole that was in the Metal Gear mythology, because supposedly in, I guess it's like Metal Gear 1 or 2, you kill Big Boss.
In the first one, you kill him, and then he's back in the second one.
Yeah, and people were like, "How, if you killed Big Boss, why is he back?" But now that you know that there were two Big Bosses, it makes sense.
Yeah, like the theory is that the Snake from Metal Gear Solid 5 is the person you killed at the end of Metal Gear 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Big Boss's Phantom. It's the Phantom Pain. But yeah, and so the Phantom Pain, though, speaking of the title, it has some... Another connotation with it is that, did you feel that the game felt kind of unfinished story-wise?
Oh, 100% it was unfinished. It was... You're playing the game, and it's building towards something... And then it just, like, is then all of a sudden the next mission you're playing is a replay of the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And then you get the information that you're really not Big Boss. And then the game kind of fucking ends. And it leaves this whole plot with Liquid Snake, Eli, who's Liquid Snake.
Yeah.
Kind of dangling. And then, but if you go on YouTube, there's actually footage of what was supposed to be Chapter 3. Because the game is split up in two chapters. Chapter 1, you're fighting Skullface.
Yes, yeah, Skullface. And, who, by the way, is the most hilarious villain ever. He's like the Lone Ranger or something. I'm like, is this anti-American or something? I don't know.
But then after you take care of Skullface, you go into, like, Chapter 3, which is kind of dealing with the aftermath of that, and also, you know, dealing with Eli Liquid Snake. And then that just kind of ends up going nowhere, and the game ends.
He escaped, he steals the Metal Gear and leaves, and that's left completely hanging.
Yeah, but they actually was a Chapter 3 they were working on that they never finished, and footage of it is up on YouTube. Have you watched that?
Oh, yeah, I've watched it.
Yeah.
I saw it on Kotaku, which is a site I normally would never go to, but they had it up there, and yeah, it showed what was supposed to happen. There was supposed to be a big showdown with Eli.
Yep.
It was supposed to be a big epic mission on a new area, a new island.
Yep.
But Konami, and this is the story. This could be Kojima trolling and saying, "I'm leaving a Phantom Pain for you, the audience." I wouldn't put it past him. But I need a Phantom Pain for my finale. But Konami was, at the time, the company wanted to focus on cell phone games with microtransactions and pachinko machines. They were only interested in that. They didn't like spending millions of dollars on these big budget games anymore. And so this was a very expensive game, and they were basically pressuring Kojima to wrap it up, and he didn't have time to finish it, and he was on the outs at the company anyway. So it was kind of like they were like, just rush it out the door. So when the game ends, you do this final mission where you save Quiet, and you know afterwards you can still play the game.
Yep.
And you can play it. Side missions seem to go on forever. Like they just randomly generate. It seems.
I finished all the side missions.
Oh, so they do end.
Yeah, yeah. I've finished all the side missions.
Okay.
right now, because I haven't played it in a while, but I'm still trying to build Mother Base up to its highest level, and it's taking fucking forever.
Yeah, I thought about getting the new, like, Ultimate Edition of it, even though I know, like, it's probably just a waste of money, but...
It's a waste. If you got Ground Zeroes and you got Phantom Pain, it's a waste of money.
Okay, so that's all it is? There's nothing new in there? Okay.
You get, like, some of the DLC with Metal Gear Online, but if you don't play Metal Gear Online, there's no reason to go.
I don't. So, no, never not going to get it then. Good to know.
Yeah.
But you get basically all these tapes dumped on you that kind of let you know some, that wrap up some plot threads, but a lot of it's left hanging, you know?
Yep. But, yeah, and I definitely feel it was because, I mean, from what I heard, the game was very expensive. I think it cost like something like $75 million.
Yeah,
or something.
It was, and it made money though. Like, it was not like a dud. It made tons of money, but.
And even though it was unfinished, the reviews for it were great. Like, it got great fucking reviews.
Oh, it did. It did. And everybody said the only problem was it just kind of feels unfinished.
Unfinished, yeah.
But the go ahead. Sorry, my thought's not complete.
Yeah, it completely felt unfinished. But it was so... But it was a long game, too. It was like, I think even if you, like, rush through it, it would still take you, like, 30 hours to finish. And so it was a long game, and you definitely felt like you were getting your money's worth. If you paid $60 for the game, you got your money's worth.
You got your money's worth big time. I mean, big league. It's a game where there's so much to do. There's so many side missions. You build your base. You build your army. You can collect animals. You have a platform that is basically a zoo.
Yeah, you build a zoo in the game.
My favorite, by the way, the best part is the Fulton extraction.
Oh yeah,
like you just attach balloons and they fly up in the air. But my favorite is when like you shoot an enemy and they're like mortally wounded and you Fulton them and they're like, nope. Did not survive extraction.
Well, I actually have my Fulton upgraded as far as you can. So it actually, and my medical team really, really good to where I don't kill people through Fultons anymore.
Oh, wow. And I have the black hole Fulton.
I got that too.
It sends them through a wormhole.
There's like the thing is there's so much craziness in the game too, you know?
Yeah, it's wacky. It's funny. It's a very funny game.
You know, it's got all these like weird fucking mechanics. Like you can take like pictures of girls in bikinis and put them on a box, and you sneak around the box. And if when you stand up in the box and show the picture of the bikini girl, all the soldiers will just like, you know, sit there with their tongues wagging like a friggin' you know, like a friggin' cartoon.
And like I also loved it when like I'd be playing a mission at night and you just get fucking attacked by some animal.
Yep.
The game has this funny thing where you kind of see a little narrative through that. You spend a lot of time in your command helicopter, like your airbase.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I love how like all these pictures are put up. Like Snake has all his buddies on pictures, and it kind of grows as the game goes on. But
and then you have to murder them all.
Yeah, like you know, Huey's on there, and then you were like, well, we're sending his fucking ass out to sea. And then if you played Metal Gear Solid 2, you find out how Huey was basically cucked by his son, Otacon, which is one of the big sad sequences in Metal Gear Solid 2. Uh-huh. But you kind of think about it, and you're like, oh, Huey is like a real piece of shit. Like, when you look at the entire narrative of Huey Emmerich, of that character, the sort of traitorous he is kind of like the sort of person like an alt writer would hate or something. What are some other thoughts you have on this, Garrow?
I mean, it's definitely a fun game. Like if you play it, you're gonna have fun. You know, it's definitely like weird. You know, the villains, you know, you got Skullface.
They're cartoonish. Like that's one thing I love about these games is how cartoony the villains are.
Yeah.
Like you're going up against this specialized team and they're all fucking weirdos. Like, you know, in Metal Gear Solid you have like they all have great names like Decoy Octopus, Psycho Mantis, Vulcan Raven.
And then basically in Metal Gear Solid 5, you see like a young child Psycho Mantis.
Oh, yes, young Psycho Mantis is in the game. But also, one of the more interesting missions, I've never seen a game deal with this, is where you have to go. There's a mission where you're infiltrating an army of child soldiers.
Yep.
You're going and doing an extraction mission through a group of children. Like, it's all these little black African soldiers running around.
And, you know, the ones that white liberals say they love but actually do nothing for.
Yeah, it's like Joseph Kony shit. Like, yep. You know, like, it's like Kony 2012 type stuff. But, yeah, there's all – and it's so weird when you play it because you see these little tiny kids with guns walking around with helmets on, yep. You know?
Yep.
And by the way, and their general is this white, you know, is this evil white child?
Yep,
Eli. Yep. Eli, who's great. He's basically just like he is in Metal Gear Solid. He's, yep. you know. And when you fight him, he's one of the hardest bosses in the game.
Oh yeah. He was. I think I tried like six times to beat that.
I thought he was the hardest boss in the game. Because the game is very, it does not allow you to kill children.
Yep.
So,
unfortunately.
One of the things in the game is you're infiltrating a child soldier camp, but you are not allowed to murder the children. The game draws the line at killing kids. So if you just go, okay, Eli, I'm going to shoot you in the head, you lose. So you have to find a way to beat him that doesn't involve just murdering him.
Yeah, because the thing is, you have all these weapons at your disposal. You have lethal and non-lethal. So basically, when you're going out, you can't even kill the black child soldiers. So you actually got to find non-lethal ways when you come in contact.
You
got
to put them to sleep. But if you shoot them with darts, you know, a lot of times they'll raise the alarm and then you're screwed. Yeah. You know?
But then you have like sleep gas canisters you can throw,
yes.
Which are very useful.
But that was something that I thought was like, whoa, when you get to that part in the game, that was kind of like heavy, I thought.
Mm-hmm. The game is definitely has a lot on its mind, maybe way too much on its mind.
I think every Metal Gear Solid game has way too much on its mind. Like, there's so many things going on. In fact, they're tonally inconsistent because they have very serious themes and they're also hilarious at the same time.
It's like you'll have the weirdest fucking shit and then like a super fucking serious scene. It's almost like a Hong Kong movie.
Yeah, it really is. Like, if you like Hong Kong movies, these games are where it's at. In Metal Gear Solid 4, you meet that like merchant who's like this black dude who dresses like Prince, you know. And he's like, oh,
he's
right.
Kind of funky.
All right, I'll sell you some weapons, brother.
And he's got a monkey.
Oh, and, but, you know, one of the, he has a pet monkey, guys.
Yep.
Jesus. One of my favorite little things, too, in Metal Gear Solid 3, speaking of Hideo Kojima's love of movies, every time you save, you call this character paramedic.
Uh-huh.
And every time you save, she and Snake talk about movies for, like, 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
She's like, Snake, have you ever seen the original Godzilla from 1954? No, is that the one with Raymond Burr? Before that, that was the Americanized version. They ruined it. The original film, it's about nuclear blah, blah, blah. And they have these, like, discussions about movies every time you save. You can skip through them, but it's pretty hilarious because it's a different one every time.
Uh-huh.
She's like, Snake, have you ever seen Guns of the Navarone? it's hilarious. There's like, that was one of the funny things about the Metal Gear games when you could call people on the codec was all the weird little conversations you would have with people that are just totally fucking bizarre. There was one, oh God, what was it? Oh, but something that I saw popping up recently was the dialogue for Metal Gear Solid 2. Mm-hmm. How it predicted political discussion on social media.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever see that?
No, I never saw that one.
Okay, so there's this scene at the end, and it seemed nonsensical at the time. Now you watch it and you go, oh my God, I need to go play this game again because it may have predicted where we are. But Colonel Campbell's a character through the games, and in Metal Gear Solid 2, you think you're talking to Colonel Campbell, but it's really an AI. Mm-hmm. And it kind of bends reality because Metal Gear Solid 2, they're rehashing the scenario from Metal Gear Solid 1. And when you look at the scenario, it kind of makes sense. You're like, oh, it is kind of the same game, just with different this, that, and the other. And the whole game is supposed to be a critique on sequels and games and blah, blah, blah. But the AI, Colonel Campbell, is talking about how people will form bubbles online, which in which they can reinforce their opinions and never be exposed to other ones. And they say it much more eloquently than that. But mm-hmm. you listen to it and you're like, oh my God, it's Facebook. This was uh-huh. way before any of that shit. And it was talking about how the internet is going to basically cut people off from each other and cut mm-hmm. people off from communities and form these imaginary fake communities in your homes, you know, that'll cut you off from the outside. And I was like, whoa, you know, when I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is the, because here's the thing, like when we talk about video games, I can't just play a video game that I'm not interested in the story with. Like that's my thing. Like people go, oh, video games, oh, they're not great. I don't like them, and I go, no, there's some great storytelling in video games.
Oh yeah, like the Naughty Dog stuff we were talking about, amazing. You know.
Yeah, and it's like I here's the perfect example. Like, I love the first BioShock. I think the first BioShock.
The first BioShock is amazing and
yeah.
actually, like, a pretty great critique of libertarianism.
Yep. I fucking love that game. And then I couldn't wait for BioShock 2 to come out.
BioShock 2 Lost 2, in New York?
Yeah, BioShock 2 Lost in New York, featuring a cameo from Donald Trump.
Yes, yes. He didn't help that child, that monster.
And I'm playing BioShock 2, and I'm like, and about halfway through it, I'm like, I fucking hate this game.
Yeah.
And I realized the reason I hated it was because it Ken Levine, the guy who did BioShock 1, had nothing to do with it.
He didn't. It was a totally different team.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, that's why I'm not interested in this story. And I stopped playing it halfway through it, and I'm like, I'm done with this game. I don't like it. And I never finished BioShock 2. And then when BioShock Infinite comes out, it's done by Ken Levine, and I fucking loved it. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I will say I have not played BioShock Infinite yet. Maybe this is a future show, because
I think we've got to do a BioShock
show. I just got the BioShock Collection for PS4, okay. So I have it.
BioShock Infinite is fucking fantastic. It's amazing, and it's another game that pissed off liberals.
Yeah, and it's because, like, I loved the society in BioShock, the Andrew Ryan, yeah. that who's basically Ayn Rand.
Yep.
and it is basically, like, who is John Galt? Like, it is the John Galt city from yep. Atlas Shrugged. And it's it is, like, being a person who used to flirt with libertarianism, like, it is, like, a brilliant critique of it. And it's the whole feel of that game, like with the 1920s, you know, records and
yep.
the sort of bombed out, like underwater, you know, jazz age society is amazing.
And the one thing I love about the those two Ken Levine games, BioShock and BioShock Infinite, is that he creates these worlds that are just so immersive. And it's like, that's one of the ways that video games can be better than movies, is that you have this immersion that you yes. really don't get from movies. And BioShock and BioShock Infinite are definitely two games that immerse you in these two way different worlds, one under the water and one up in the air. And, and I think the stuff he does is fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like with video games, is you can build these worlds that, you know, you really get sucked into.
Yep.
And I know the critiques, like, you know, it feels like a waste of time, blah, blah, blah. But it is like binge watching a TV show or something.
Yeah. Like, and you can do, I mean, name a movie that deals with, like, Ayn Randism and the nature of choice. Like, BioShock does. Oh, my God.
And you want to talk about killing children yep. in games. BioShock, Jesus. Oh, my God. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, there's this relationship you have where there are these little girls. What are they called again?
Little Sisters.
Little Sisters, and there's the Big Daddies.
Yep.
And the Little Sisters, you can save them, and doing so, like, doesn't really help you in the short term, but in the long term, it does.
Yep.
If you choose to kill them, it will help you immensely in the moment, but in the long term, it will not help you.
Yeah, because you can harvest them for Eve, which you use to either you upgrade your powers, or I think you use it. I forget what you use for Eve, or I haven't played Bioshock in a while.
So unlike Metal Gear, Bioshock has no problem.
No.
Oh my god. But it encourages you not to. And that's a good thing in some way. Does Bioshock Infinite deal with that at all, or does it have different take? Or
Bioshock Infinite is kind of a different game. You know, I think the one thing Ken Levine didn't want, even doing a Bioshock sequel, he didn't want to repeat himself, and that's why it's a totally different scenario. And yes, it does. While you're playing it, even though it's totally different characters, totally different setting, it still feels Bioshock.
Okay.
And I mean, because in the first Bioshock, the person you're playing doesn't speak at all.
No, and you're basically like, you're like Gordon Freeman in Half-Life. You're an anonymous. It's you, basically.
Yeah, but in this, you're Booker DeWitt, and you're having long conversations with Elizabeth, you know, who you end up saving from the tower. And believe me, when you play through Bioshock Infinite, like, it's almost like the ending, because basically Bioshock, the first Bioshock, has this huge twist, which I won't ruin here, and you kind of go into Bioshock Infinite going, you know, this is Bioshock, there's going to be a big twist. And then when the big twist happens, you're still fucking stunned by it.
Nice. That's good.
You know? And that's what I enjoyed about it. Like, I've played through Bioshock Infinite probably about 5 times, because that's how much I fucking love the game. I'd say Bioshock Infinite was probably... It's probably one of my all-time... Both Bioshocks are probably two of my all-time favorite games.
I'm going to have to, I think, during my break or something, I'm going to have to sit down and just knuckle down on that game, because I have it. I just, you know, I got the new remaster of it, so I'm going to play it.
And the thing I don't get, like, people always say, you know, people when Hollywood goes and they make, you know, movies out of video games, why do they always pick the video games that have no fucking stories?
I don't...
Resident Evil has a story, but they kind of don't even use that story for the movies.
No, they don't. In fact, the first Resident Evil movie was kind of supposed to be taking place around the story from the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've incorporated elements for the story. I actually really like the Resident Evil movies.
I don't.
Oh, they're stupid, but I think they're a lot of fun. But the Resident Evil 4, by the way, one of my favorites.
I can't remember which one that is. They all kind of blend into one movie for me.
It's the one with where you're in Spain, and you know, it's your
lead. Does not narrow it down enough for
me. Okay, well, you might not have played it, but it's well worth it. It's on PS4.
You're talking about the games, not the movies.
Yeah, the games.
I've only played one Resident Evil game. I played Resident Evil, I think it was 5.
Oh, okay, you need to play 4. It's on PS4, so...
And I liked Resident Evil 5. I would always joke with my black friend. I go, oh, Resident Evil 5 is the best video game ever. You're a white guy in Africa, and basically all the black people are zombies, so now you got an excuse to shoot them.
Well, and that was the big controversy, because when the game was announced and it was shown, it was all black zombies, and people flipped out. And so Capcom made, like, a bunch of them white, just to, like, because they were like, oh, shit, because the Japanese don't think about that shit.
Yeah.
You know, because they have a homogenous society, you know.
Yeah, and I just thought, and I was like, okay, this is a perfect thing to harass my black friend with, friend with. You know, I'm like, you've got to get this game. It's fantastic.
But I
never played 4, but I played 5. And I heard Resident Evil 6 was terrible. So
Resident Evil 6 is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But Resident Evil 4, it's on PS4. So seriously, like, go get it from PSN. It's an amazing game. The story is kind of retarded, but that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun, honestly, because it's so campy and goofy. But it's also, like, legitimately, like, adrenaline pumping.
Cool.
It was a game-changing But it was a game changer in terms of video games because the perspective that it used and stuff, it was all new at the time, the way mm-hmm. the gameplay was done. And games since have totally imitated it, yeah. Like all types of games. So, yeah, definitely. I'm going to play Bioshock Infinite. You need to play Resident Evil 4.
Okay, maybe, and I think you're gonna love Bioshock
Maybe Infinite. Maybe that's what we should do. You should play Resident Evil 4. I'll play Bioshock Infinite. I'll do a show on
it. Okay. Well, I think what we need to do just a big Bioshock show.
We do need to do a big Bioshock show.
Yeah, because what I was pissed off about was because after I played Bioshock and I heard that they were planning on making a movie of it, I'm like, this is gonna make a great fucking movie. I mean, it's like if you stick to the story that's in the game, this is gonna be a fucking amazing movie. And then basically, because Gore Verbinski, the guy who did the Pirates of the Caribbean movies Rango and all that, he was going to do it. And then Universal balked at the budget because he wanted to do it R-rated. You've got to make it. If you're going
to
do it,
it has to be R-rated. It has to be
rated R. And then they're like, okay, we're not going to do it. Then they brought in this other director to kind of bring it in cheaper. And basically, I guess he was changing the movie too much. And Ken Levine actually stepped in because he had veto power and said, you know what? Don't do it because they were going to ruin the movie.
Well, that's like, it was like when they chose to do Doom PG-13. Like, really? Like, you're doing, which by the way, game with barely any story. It's just, you're a Marine on Mars. Yep. Hell is opened up. Kill everything.
Yeah. It's like they pick all these fucking games that have no fucking stories. Like, it's like, okay, let's get Aaron Paul and make Need for Speed the movie. And it's like, there's no fucking story in Need for Speed. It's a fucking racing game.
It's a racing game.
Yeah. Why are you putting all your money into that and not doing a fucking Bioshock game, you dumb motherfuckers? And then basically, they also were going to do a Last of Us movie. And here's the thing. Last of Us, the video game, blows away all of The Walking Dead.
It blows away almost every zombie movie. Yeah. I mean, it's
fucking fantastic. The story of The Last of Us. I mean, it's the best. It's probably the best zombie thing in like 10 years.
It really is. And it most original, too. I mean,
yeah. And it's fantastic, and they were like, we're going to do a movie of it, and they were actually bringing in the Druckmann and who wrote the game to actually write the script, and then basically they're like, we don't think we're going to do it. And it's like, come on, The Last of Us would make a great fucking movie, and yet, they're going to go and make some Pong the movie instead, just find the ones with no story and turn those into movies, and that's why video game movies get a bad fucking reputation.
Yeah, and one video game movie, we're actually going to do an MMC on it, this is a video game movie John likes, is Silent Hill. Silent Hill 2 has one of my favorite stories of any video game. Mm-hmm. It's got a really somber, serious story that is actually is a really great story about loss and like kind of mourning. Mm-hmm. And the way your character behaves, the way you deal with it in that game. And this, I know that sounds really fucking lame, but it's just subtle stuff. The way you play the game really influences the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Silent Hill 2, one of my favorites, but the movie is one that John and I want to do because it really feels like a Lucio Fulci, like Italian horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the movie when it came out, but I haven't revisited since then.
Yeah, it's. I think it's one of the better video game movies. It was done by Christoph Gans, who did Brotherhood of the Wolf and the recent Beauty and the Beast movie, which was very good.
I haven't seen it.
With Vincent Cassell. Very good. Like,
and I like Vincent Cassell. The last movie I saw Vincent Cassell in was that really fucking shitty Jason Bourne movie.
Oh yeah, didn't see it.
Yeah, no. I wasn't planning on seeing it. I went to go see the new Jet Li movie that was playing at Boston Common called, I think, Gods of War or something. I forget what the name. And I go see it, and the movie doesn't have any fucking English subtitles. So I'm like, fuck. I'm like, what can I go see now? And the next thing fucking starting with Jason Bourne, I'm like, fuck it, I guess I'm seeing Jason Bourne.
but Metal Gear has also been bandied around as a movie. I know Tom Cruise and Paula Wagner had it for a while back when they were partnered up.
Well, I think one of the reasons they ended up hiring Kiefer Sutherland to play the voice of Snake in this was in case there was a movie, they were going to get Kiefer Sutherland to actually play Snake,
which would have been a great choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and obviously it's not going to happen now because of what's happened with Konami. And by the way, did you see the Metal Gear Survive bullshit?
Yeah,
looks like complete garbage. It's like a zombie survival thing. It's not anything Metal Gear really. It's just slapping the name on something.
Yeah, and it's like, and the thing is like, Kojima is always like, you know, okay, this is the last Metal Gear game. Like, he said that with Metal Gear Solid 4 Guns of the Patriots.
He said it with 3, too. Like, he said he's approached every single one like it would be the last one.
Yeah, and but you know that if he ended up, you know, not having the fallout with Kojima, there would have been a Metal Gear Solid 6.
There
no
would have been. Of
it.
Course, he would have done it. He would have done, like, a follow-up to 4 or a follow-up to this one that further explains the Venom Snake, you know, big boss thing, but, you know, it's not going to happen now.
And it sucks because I really felt that they hit a sweet spot with this game to where it didn't feel like you were playing a movie all the time like you did with fucking Part 4. It actually felt very more into like what I think he was trying to do from the outset.
Yes, it really realized everything that he was trying to do. Like you are a soldier, you are building an army, you're infiltrating, you're escaping, you're doing all this stuff, and you have a lot of freedom over it. Yeah. I think it's almost a bit cartoony how many guns you can have. develop, because like, it's like, what is the difference between these weapons? like every gun in existence is available to you to develop and get in this game.
But it's great. It's like, I'd rather have the choice than not have the choice, you know? There's just so much to do. You can go in and replay fucking missions and try different, you know, tactics. You can go in silent. You can go in with guns blazing. You can try all types of different shit.
And like, you know, and you get different rewards for different ways of approaching it, you know?
Yeah. And it's just, the game is just fun. I had fun playing it. And it was the perfect sweet spot of having something fun to play and an interesting story to go along with it, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, I think the Metal Gear games are some of the most cinematic. And, and, you know, being a movie podcast, you know, it's a good choice. It's a good one for movie fans to check out because there's so much there for movie fans to enjoy.
Yeah. And I mean, Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland. You know. You know, David Hayter, you know, but his Solid Snake voice is one of the funniest. Metal Gear, you know, like they actually used it in car commercials recently.
Yeah.
You know, like, but one of the comedy things is he always repeats the things somebody says. Snake, the enemy has Metal Gear. Metal Gear.
Yeah, because I think they were going for more gravitas with this one, and that's why they brought in Kiefer.
Because David Hayter's voice, it's fun, but it's cartoony.
Yeah, and basically there was like some real somber shit in Metal Gear Solid 5, and I think they're like, oh, we can't have the jokey David Hayter voice. We need like someone with gravitas, like a fucking Kiefer Sutherland, you know? Because I'm sure Kojima was a big 24 fan, and that's probably why he brought in the Kiefer.
Oh, he has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. God, there's just so much. There's so much fun shit, like in Metal Gear Solid 2, you go in an area where there's a bunch of birds pooping everywhere, you slip in bird shit if you run too fast. If in Metal Gear Solid 1, there's a part where there's wolves running around and they'll fucking attack you if they see you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you lie down and one of them pisses on you, they'll love you. Like, there's just so many things in these games. I don't know. There's just, I could talk forever about
them. Well, I mean, and then there's in Metal Gear Solid 5, when you go to Mother Base, you can just spend your time there just beating the shit out of your soldiers.
And they're like, thank you, sir. Thank you, boss.
Like, you know, you just go there and you beat the living shit out of them.
And then Fulton extract them.
Yeah. And then they're also, when you're constructing your mother base, they'll have that thing where it's like, don't stand here, you know, falling stuff. And if you stand there for too long, like a box will come and knock you out. there's just like all these little things in the game that just makes it enjoyable, you know? I mean, I just had so much fucking fun playing it, you know, and finding new ways to do shit and you know, in a way, it's a lot like Grand Theft Auto with the freedom where you can just kind of go crazy and just create your own little world, you know, destruction.
But even the more linear ones, they have a lot of little things to find to sort of that make each playthrough different and unique, you know, like you can find new things, you can, you know, try something else and affect the outcome differently. Let's wear this chicken hat.
Yeah, but that's the other thing that's great in the game. Like, I never used it, but if you're having a hard difficulty with one of the missions, you can choose to wear a chicken hat, which makes whenever you come up to an enemy, they just don't they just like laugh?
Yeah, they just start laughing at you.
Yeah, so you can choose to wear a chicken hat if a mission is too difficult.
Oh my god!
Yeah, they're just like little, like crazy little Kojima things in the games.
And my favorite is the fake arm. You can fire your rocket arm at people.
Yep.
And punch them out with it.
Or you can like make it to where you can electrify people with it, or you know, it's just there's so much crazy kooky shit in this.
Or you know what? I'm gonna pass the time. I'm gonna take a smoke break.
Okay.
Smoke my cigar. You know,
I think it's a fucking trolling him putting that in that. Yeah. Like, oh, because every time you fucking like go to smoke your cigarette, someone passes by and catches you.
Yeah,
you
know? I know, right? I can't tell you how many times I've done that, and I got screwed over.
Yeah, I think that was definitely him trolling the player, putting that mechanic in the game.
And you know what's funny is in the early games, Snake smoked Lucky Strike cigarettes. It was like did they get money from the tobacco companies for that?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
It was like Lucky Strikes.
And it's great because the game has this like his games have like this weird like American pop culture filtered through Japanese sensibilities.
Yes.
In the game, which makes them way more entertaining, you know, because of that, you know, because it's like because you just have this level of weirdness that you don't see in regular games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, any other thoughts on Metal Gear?
I'm just disappointed we're probably not going to see another Kojima Metal Gear game. We're probably going to see more Metal Gear games, but not Kojima, so why even fucking bother? It's like a Bioshock game not made by Ken Levine. It's worthless.
I'm not planning on picking up Metal Gear Survive. Like, it would have to get rave reviews for me to bother with it. But I am looking forward to Death Stranding. And actually, funny note, I mean, this is his first non-Metal Gear. Well, actually, that's not true. He did some non-Metal Gear games, like on Game Boy Advance and stuff, that were interesting. But there was actually a Metal Gear game on Game Boy Color that I had that was pretty fun. It was basically like the PlayStation 1. It was just, you know, Game Boy Color. It was well done, like really well done. But but so part of the whole, you know, collapse of Kojima and Konami, he was doing a Silent Hill game called Silent Hills with Norman Reedus. And the demo came out on PS4. Did you play that?
I did not. I never played it.
It was really, really fucking scary. And I thought it was really good. And Guillermo del Toro was involved with it somehow. Not that I'm a big fan of his, but
he made the best Blade movie.
He did make the best Blade movie. You're right. Yeah. That might be his best movie.
Yeah, I agree. That's the only movie of his I own on Blu-ray is Blade 2.
Yeah, I have Kronos. I like that movie. But so they were doing that, but then Konami pulled the plug on it because they didn't want another big-budget game. And apparently Death Stranding is sort of what resulted from the collaboration between Kojima and, you know, the actors that were supposed to be in Silent Hills.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I mean, Death Stranding, but Death Stranding doesn't look like it's going to be a horror game. It looks like it's going to be more of an action game.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so I think that's like where the similarities
end. I think you're going to see some themes carry over because the trailer for Death Stranding has Norman Reedus holding a weird baby creature.
Yep.
And Silent Hills, the demo for that had a weird baby creature in it as well. So there's a couple of little things I picked up on in the trailer that were definitely carryovers from that project. It's not going to be a horror game, though. You're right.
Yeah. But the one thing we can know that Death Stranding is going to be, it's going to be fucking weird and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, the trailer, it's like when you watch it, you go, what is this? Like, I don't know what the story is going to be. Like, you see Norman Reedus's butt. I guess, so there's going to be Norman Reedass in it. But, you know. but I'm really looking forward to that game. So, you know, what Kojima does in the future, you know, I'm there for that, not there for the Metal Gear series, you know.
I think you're going to have to wait probably about 4 or 5 years before we get that game, because Kojima does take a long time.
They said 2017, but I think it's going to be like 2019 or something.
I mean, definitely, I'm gonna buy it, because Metal Gear Solid 5 was so damn good. I have to buy whatever his next game is.
I kind of wonder if it'll even come out for the PS4, because this console generation's kind of looking fickle to me.
Yeah, I think the PS4 Pro is out now, and I'm eventually gonna get it, but I'm in no rush.
I played the PlayStation VR recently.
How was that?
It was cool. I don't know if it'll have legs. It was really cool because, you know, I'm playing a racing game and, you know, I'm going, oh, I can check my blind spots. You know, that's pretty neat. It was definitely like I'd never done a VR thing. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool, but I honestly don't know if we're going to see Sony supporting it long term. It almost kind of feels like a test.
Yeah, I am not interested in it because I get motion sickness easily.
Oh well, don't bother then.
Yeah, so I have no interest in virtual reality because
I don't get motion sickness, but people who do fucking hate it, you know.
Yeah, because like I can't play a lot of video games either because of motion sickness. Like I think the only first person shooters I can actually play are, for some reason, BioShock games don't make me motion sickness.
Well, they're not as chaotic as like the id style games, you know, which are you're flying around and
I played that new Tomb Raider, and that one made me fucking sick as hell playing it. Ugh. Because every time you're running, the game's camera's just fucking shaking all the time. And when I was playing Metal Gear Solid 5, I was actually starting to get sick playing that, but then there was a motion, you could turn off the shaking camera in the options, and I did, and then I was fine.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and the same thing with Uncharted 4. Uncharted 4, playing the actual campaign, I started playing it, I got like 6 chapters into it, and every time I kept playing it, I was getting sick playing it. So I just went into the multiplayer and just pretty much played the multiplayer. And then I'm like, I gotta go back into the campaign and finish this. And I'm like, so I googled like Uncharted 4 motion sickness, and it turns out that they added a thing where you can, in a patch, where you can turn off the motion blur, and I turned off the motion blur, and I was fine playing the rest of the campaign.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, a lot of, like, my playing video games depends on, will the game make me
sick my stomach playing.
So, like, but usually I'm good with third-person shooters, except for the reboot of Tomb Raider. But first-person, like, that's why you'll never see me play, like, a fucking Call of Duty or a Halo or anything like that, because playing that make, like, there was the new Battlefield that came out, Battlefield 1.
Oh, which I really want to play, because it's World War 1.
Yeah, and they had a beta of it, and my friends were like, download the beta, come play it with us and see if it makes you sick. Within 10 minutes, I was like, my head is spinning. I'm like, I cannot play this anymore. And they're like, oh, we really want to play Battlefield with you. I'm like, well, keep wanting it. It's never going to happen. You know?
Yeah.
And so basically this ongoing podcast really depends on what we cover, depends on what makes me sick
what
or
makes
not.
Garo well.
Yeah. Yeah. If a game makes me vomit, we won't be covering
it. God damn it. Cancer, motion sickness. You're a mess.
I know. I'm literally a walking death.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. I know everybody was hoping for our Trump victory lap this week, but couldn't.
Probably
do it.
Next week.
Next week is going to be, you know, we'll celebrate the impending coronation of the God Emperor.
And plus, Stu said he didn't want to have two political shows back to back,
which I didn't either. To be fair,
yeah.
You know, I was like, last episode was so politics heavy, and I know our listeners like it based on the reaction, but you know, kind of like to shake it up. But if you like us talking about video games, let us know, because I want to do more video game related shows with Garo. You know, so yeah.
And I think the two we probably are looking at doing are probably a Naughty Dog one and probably a BioShock one.
Yeah, like I'll play through the rest of the. I'll focus on playing through the rest of the Uncharted and the BioShock games, and we'll do those. Yeah, and I've also been playing. I've also been playing Deus Ex.
I've never played any of those.
I've been playing that recently. That's a good one. But yeah,
and also if you notice, the reason I haven't played that, it's first person.
Yeah, it is. It's not as chaotic. I think you might be okay, but we'll see. I don't know. I don't get motion sickness. So I don't know.
Yeah, I do, and literally, it's like that really, you know, puts a damper on what I'm able to play.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot of walking around and talking to people, you know, but. But yeah, so anyway, well, just let us know what you think in the Facebook group. Go join up there and get in on the discussion. Lots more chit-chat over there. A lot of it's political.
Yep. In the last week, there hasn't been much movie talk going on.
I know. I try to make political posts that are related to movies somehow. You know, like I posted the Donald Trump doing Captain Phillips. Look at me. I'm president now.
The one thing I was wondering, like, you know, because Trump met with Obama today at the White House.
Yes.
And I was just thinking to myself, I wonder if Obama was like, please don't cancel Obamacare. If you do, I'll suck your dick.
Oh, God. I'll suck your dick, Trump.
Please don't cancel Obamacare.
I saw there was a think piece about Trump's body language during that meeting that was showing that he had learned stuff he did not want to know or something. I was like, oh, God. Oh, God.
This is going to be a great 4 to 8 years.
It is. One of my friends just posted on Facebook, feminist slut-shaming Melania Trump, LOL.
Oh, yeah, that's what I've seen on Facebook, too. It's like people who are very, like, women. And this is women. This isn't men.
Yeah.
Like, posting, like, that those naked photos of Melania being like, hey, all you Trump voters, here's your first lady. And it's like, it's like liberals are the worst. They're the worst.
It's the double standard, my friend. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're not on our side, we'll slut shame you. But if you're slut shaming one of us, that's not appropriate.
One of my favorite memes I saw was I think it was Ted Nugent put it up, where it was like an ugly photo of Hillary Clinton and Chelsea, and then a photo of like Melania and Ivanka, and it was just said "Make America Hot Again."
Oh, was it? Oh. So I was at the gym earlier today, and I was on the rowing machine, and I was listening to a podcast, and I was rowing away, and there was a guy rowing next to me, and. CNN was on above us, and then there was a story about Melania Trump up there, and it was this, like, showing all these pictures of her and talking about her, and I noticed both – I just looked up, and I was suddenly fixated watching CNN, and the guy next to me was fixated watching CNN, too, and after the piece was over, I had my headphones on, but he just turns to me, and I saw he turned to me, and I, like, popped my earbud off, and he goes – best first lady ever.
Yep.
I didn't know. I was like, I went, amen, brother.
You know, what's funny is when someone posted the nude photo of Melania, I actually wanted to write in the comments, like, too bad Michelle couldn't take a photo like that, because she can't, because she'd have to tuck.
Michelle? You mean Michael?
Oh, yeah, Michael. Michael Obama.
Yeah, thank you. You
know, yeah, She can't do full frontal nude.
We gotta be correct with our pronouns here. I mean, our naming here.
I'm sorry, I was assuming the gender, which is a big no-no with liberals.
Oh my goodness! Well, now we're going full, like, shit posty.
Yeah.
Politics.
We're doing stuff that should be in next week's show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We don't wanna walk all over John and Stu's. No contributions here.
Yeah. Well, that's just a tease for next week.
Yeah, just a tease. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up, Garrow. You got anything to talk about before we go?
My movie, Dangerous People, coming out next year from SGL Entertainment, will probably be on Amazon Prime for free to watch before it even hits Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is going to have... 80 minutes, no, it's about 70 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage, which is actually has more nudity than the movie, which seemed like an impossibility, but it's actually not. Commentary tracks, including a Midnight Movie Cowboys commentary track.
Hey, yeah.
And it's going to be a pretty great Blu-ray. And then I think we're also screening At the Fright Night Film Festival in Kentucky, the weekend, that weekend right after Thanksgiving, and we're showing Saturday night at, I think, 9 o'clock. I'm not going to be there, unfortunately, but if you're in Kentucky, because I'm sure people are just finding themselves in Kentucky, go to the Fright Night Film Festival and check out Dangerous People.
Yeah, so if you're in the Kentucky area, go see Dangerous People. Go catch it and then pick it up on Blu-ray and you can hear us talk about it.
And also, we recently played the Upstate New York Film Festival and we came up runner-up for the What the Fuck Award.
That's a good one.
And I can, part of me would be like, oh, what we can't get the top prize for the What the Fuck Award? But I saw the short film that won the What the Fuck Award, and I'm happy coming in second.
That reminds me when I was at I had a short film in the Indie Memphis Film Festival, and it won the Best Freakout Scene.
Cool.
Because there's a scene where I basically jump to my death. I freak out and leap through a window to my mm-hmm. death. And, we did it green screen, like CGI, but it was pretty fun to do. I was like, yeah, do my own stunts, bro.
Yeah. The one that won the short film was about a guy who just gets out of jail and, is going to this like alley to find like a prostitute or something. And in the alley, he sees this kind of like short, like monster or something. And the monster like attacks him and he's like, oh, get off. But then the monster pulls down his zipper and sucks his dick.
Oh my God.
And then after he sucks his dick, like puts his card in his pocket with his phone number. And that's the one that won the What the Fuck Award. And I'm like, okay, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's definitely probably weirder than anything in your movie.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, you win.
God.
But yeah, so...
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, Dangerous People. Keep an eye out for it. Yeah. And see the trailer on Vimeo or YouTube, Red Band trailer. Then the trailer has nudity in it. I haven't said that in a couple of shows.
Yeah. Well, if that's about it, I think we're going to wrap it up. Anything else?
Not that I can think of. If you like this episode, let us know and we'll do another one.
We'll do another one. Yes. And
if you hate it, we'll never do it again.
If you hate it, we might do another one just to be dicks, but whatever.
But if you hate it, the video game we're going to do is Pong and we're going to do a 3-hour show.
We're going to do a 3-hour show. We're going to be like, when we're going to talk about Noah Bushnell and Atari for, I don't know. People might actually like that. No, we're going to just talk about the game, the plot.
Yep. Pong. We're going to be like, remember that time the ball hit the paddle and went to the other paddle?
And it went boop.
Yep. Boop. And had 3 hours of that.
Yeah. And, we'll come up with esoteric theories about the Pong mythos. Yep. Like that it's actually like aliens and ships that are trading fire. And they invent a weapon that bounces back and forth, but if it goes past, it destroys the mothership or something. I don't know.
Unfortunately, someone from Paramount just heard your pitch and bought it, Pong movie right now.
It'll be a movie directed by Peter Berg or something. So.
Yeah. Actually, no, it's going to be by the dude Paul Feig with an all-female cast.
Oh, yes. It'll be the feminist Pong movie.
Yeah.
Yes, and Leslie Jones will be in control of the Pong paddles.
Yep, and she'll scream a lot.
Yep. All right, everybody. Well, if that's about it, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
And I'm going to say, see you later, alligator.
And Magadogs.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter @MMCowboys. subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
FTV.